welcome to your weekly Nintendo News Roundup Live. Reaching every Friday night, the all-in crew breaks down the week in Nintendo news. Spiffy polo there, Eric. I'm liking it. I like the polo.
I am too, man. This thing is really nice. It's super comfortable, really well-fitting. The embroidery on the patch is really nice. You know, if other people would like to get the shirt that I'm wearing, it's a good thing. I actually have a place to point them, allin.media, our brand new website and merch store, where you yourself can get an all-in polo. Like, no kidding, guys. I'm not just, like, plugging our merch because it's our merch. It's a really good shirt, you guys.
Good. I ordered a Bit Harmony shirt off of there, and I was very happy with the quality of it.
Yeah, you wore that last week, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really happy with the quality of the new merch and stuff, so everybody should check it out. Hello, Bowza. Bowza's here in the chat. Good to see you, Bowza.
Hugs.
I hope everybody's doing well this Friday night while we sit here and talk some Nintendo news. Eric, before we do all that, though, we do have one very important matter of business to attend to.
Really? Mm-hmm. What, pray tell, might that be, sir?
Well, each and every week here on the show, and indeed our podcast in general, we thank our patrons, our wonderful friends and supporters at patreon.com/allinpodcast, keeping the lights on here in All In Towers. Let's thank them. Let's start with our Golden Banana Bunch. Let's do it. Thank you to Rob Yapel, Sean O'Baggins, Ashton, Tim A, a.k.a. NeoPrime33, a.k.a. Nintendo Dad Number 4, Phelan Ward, Bill Tucker, Marcus O'Neill, Liam D, Gamer Jason, Andrew Wilkins, Alan, hashtag Look to the Cookie, Solo, SAZ, and Bob Blah Blah. Big thank you to our Golden Banana Bunch. You can get a 7-day free trial to that tier and check out a ton of exclusive content for yourself and join their ranks. But moving into our Triforce tier, you think the godfather of Tingle Love Tuesday, of course, Josh Vaughn. Thank you to John Datfast Cummins of the Retrologic Podcast, as well as the On Topic Retro Podcast, the Globetrotten Jet Set Nintendo Hub, and Sparky of the Nintendo Hub right here on YouTube, Adam Caparello of the Retro Groove Podcast, Shy Guy, the other half of our Shy Guy Mod Squad. Thank you, Shy Guy. Daniel Hinojosa, Dan and Luma, Bowza, the Keeper of the Hugs, the Don Rob, Foolish Fuji, and the legend himself.
The brand new, straight out of store, embroidered polo shirt in human form, Uncle Randy.
Uncle Randy, thank you all so much for your continued love and support over there on Patreon.
Weird?
What's weird?
It's like, you know what? I love having Matt as part of the team now. We, you know, for those who don't know, we announced that our good friend Matt Murray, Shy Guy City, officially joined the All In crew. Definitely check out him and Seth's brand new show, Bit Harmony. But we had him like in the patron shout outs for so long that it's so weird to not hear his name when you do those.
Yeah, it's also funny because, like, I guess he's still technically part of the Shy Guy Mod Squad. Like, he's, you know,
he is, yeah.
So
you don't drop a cool name like that. As a matter of fact, Shy Guy Mod Squad sounds like a really good shirt.
Now he's just thinking about shirts. Now exactly. He's in shirt mode right now. People in the chat playing Rattarinth. Good. We're going to talk about Rattarinth a little bit later when we get into notable releases. I love it, man. I love that y'all are playing Rattarinth. Good game. Okay, Eric, let's get into some Nintendo news. We got a busy night. Let's get into it. Probably the first thing we should talk about is this Embracer Group stuff. I'm gonna lay out for people who don't know what Embracer Group is, or who have not been like keeping up with any of this stuff. I'm just gonna kind of speed run the you know, sort of short history of the Embracer Group. They were founded in like 2011 or 2012 or something like that. They ended up grabbing a bunch of companies, buying a bunch of people over the course of the past, you know, 7 years or something like that. There was a big $2 billion deal with an unknown company that sank, and they never went through with it. Cost them a bunch of money. And so to make up for that lost money, they laid off like 1,500 people. They sold off a bunch of their studios, basically to get themselves out of their hot water. And all kinds of people. And now as of this past week, they have splintered off into, they're basically disillusioning or dissolving Embracer Group into three splinter companies. And I'll let you tell the folks about that.
Yeah, so earlier this week, Embracer Group announced that, just like Seth said, they are going to be disassembling themselves effectively into three smaller companies, and the three smaller companies themselves are going to have more kind of focused agendas rather than just one big blob conglomerate that's been eating up these studios, basically like Jabba the Hutt. It is certainly worth noting, just because of such a major restructuring and how many different video game developers and publishers kind of fall under, you know, what is still currently Embracer Group, but soon to be Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends, which is one of the company's names. They're going to be focusing, apparently Middle Earth Company and Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends is going to be the company that is going to focus on like higher scale AAA video game development. And they have studios like Crystal Dynamics, Eidos Montreal, Tripwire, Warhorse Studios, and many others. They have IPs like Dead Island, you know, Kingdom Come, the Tomb Raider IP that we just got that trilogy for. Obviously because of the name of the company. They also have the Lord of the Rings, the Metro IP, and many others. So this is going to be a company, hopefully, that now that it's its own thing, I'm trying to be the eternal optimist here, hopefully now that they have a more focused and, you know, less kind of corporate umbrellaed oversight, hopefully we can actually maybe get some games from these guys every once in a while. But regardless, however this shakes out, this has got to be an incredibly difficult time for the thousands of developers and employees who now fall under, you know, what is going to become these three companies, no longer Embracer Group. So, you know, all joking aside about developing games, I hope that everybody's, you know, I hope that this works out for everybody involved, because there is a lot of incredibly talented developers within these companies who, you know, deserve to keep working. And the way that Embracer Group has been kind of operating over the past several years, it basically led a lot of people to think that something like this was coming, especially with the AAA development bubble very obviously bursting right now. But in addition to Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends, there is another company, Coffee Stain and Friends, which is apparently going to focus on the smaller scale video game development, the quote unquote indie side of things, even though this group has THQ Nordic, which anybody who's familiar with THQ Nordic knows that they have a billion different licenses themselves. I mean, in the last THQ Nordic Presents, they still teased that they had like, what, 26 games currently unannounced that they were working on? Something like that. Ghost Ship, Tuxedo Labs, again, Coffee Stain. And they have, again, a ton of kind of smaller scale IPs. They mentioned Goat Simulator on IGN, Valheim, and apparently over 200 others. So this is going to be Coffee Stain and Friends for the foreseeable future will be a company that will be focusing again on indie and quote unquote like double A video game development for the near future. The third company, Asmodee, is handling board game development, which kind of falls outside our wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I feel like this is a situation. It's funny too, if you like read and watch interviews with the Embracer Group CEO about this. He's very like, guy just kind of seems like an idiot, to be honest. And I sort of like, to me, this is sort of like a play stupid games, win stupid prizes sort of thing. you know, getting into an uncertain $2 billion deal, snatching up a bunch of companies under your weird corporate umbrella, it was never going to work. So like, yeah, I think the point that you make is salient. My only hope is that the people who are under these new umbrellas, that this, I just want it to work out for them. The people at the top can go get bent. I mean, this dude is shareholder in all three of those companies. So he's going to have a golden parachute, just like all of these big gross CEOs do. But I hope that for the sake of the people that it actually affects, I hope that the splinter works out better than the Embracer Group did.
Yeah. So we don't know really anything beyond that, but this was still a really big announcement just because of how massive of a presence Embracer Group has kind of been in this era over the past couple of years of, you know, huge company with huge capital trying to gobble up as many game studios as they possibly could. And now here it is, just like the rest of the AAA game bubble, just really bursting in front of our eyes. And this might be like the most clear and present example of that, you know, out of all the incredibly tragic layoffs that we've seen over the past few years. So hopefully there weren't mass layoffs announced in regards to this splintering. So hopefully that doesn't happen. And that's the only thing that kind of makes me hopeful about this situation, is this was clearly a necessary restructure of all of these different companies and assets and people. And, you know, as much as the CEO of Embracer Group may not seem like somebody who makes all the right decisions, hopefully a few of the right decisions have been made in regards to the people who actually work for that company.
Yeah. By his own admission, by the way.
I saw that. I deserve criticism. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of stupid.
I did see that.
We don't need to talk about that anymore.
Great thing to admit during an interview.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about something a little bit better. Let's talk about Paper Mario, man. Paper Mario, the Thousand Year Door remake, coming later next month. Less than a month away now. Got a new overview trailer this week, as Nintendo is wont to do. They typically, about a month out from their releases, they typically put out these little sort of 5 to 7 minute overview trailers. And we got one for Paper Mario, the Thousand Year Door. Got a bunch of new looks at the game. Got some new info on some of the little improvements and tweaks they're making to the game. And man, it looks good.
It does look good. I feel maybe a little, you know, a little deflated compared to, I think, a lot of the opinions that I've been seeing about it.
Okay.
I will say, I do think it was kind of weird. The trailer immediately starts with, it's like, hey guys, it's Mario.
And he's made of paper.
I'm like, yeah, we know what Paper Mario is. It's been a thing for decades now. You've announced the Paper Mario Thousand Year Door remake a long time ago. You know, it's like,
it's kind of,
yes,
funny.
We know what it is. But you know, as really nice as a lot of the improvements and quality of life additions to the game are, and we're going to get into those, you know, we've had so many really impressive, like, deluxe re-releases on the Nintendo Switch over the past few years. You know, Pikmin 3 Deluxe immediately comes to mind for me, and even something like, you know, New Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe. But you know, one of the big things about a lot of these re-releases is, you know, just a substantial amount of new content, of new stuff being added to the game. And when it comes to Paper Mario, the Thousand Year Door, I was kind of hoping that we were going to get that. Like, I was hoping that people would get a lot of the quality of life stuff that they were wanting. But this is a game that, you know, in contrast to many of the remakes, re-releases, and remasters that we have seen, this is one that people have been actually clamoring for years. So I was kind of hoping that Nintendo would take at least a similarly leveled approach to many of the other deluxe re-releases that they've been putting out. And we would see some, like, kind of big extra side adventure or something. I know I sound like, you know, super entitled right now, but you know, when they put so much effort into so many of these other games, and then you take a remaster or a re-release that people have been actually chomping at the bit for, and then mostly just only do visual upgrade and quality of life stuff, I'm still excited for it, but I'd be lying if I said it was a little deflating that we're not getting any big extra content for a game that's already 2 decades old.
I don't care. I don't need extra content.
And I'm sure a lot of people agree with you. I'm sure a lot of people are saying, it's like, dude, I'm just happy to have Thousand Year Door back. I don't need the extra content. And I get that. I absolutely get that side of it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, sure. No, it's interesting. Well, and we should say too, I mean, it's pretty likely that they aren't adding additional content to the game, but it isn't confirmed one way or the other. In fact, I will point people to some of the preview coverage that people have done, particularly Good Vibes Gaming, did a very good preview on this, and they did specifically ask about that, and Nintendo declined to comment one way or the other. So I don't know who, I mean, who knows? There has been just people analyzing this footage and like the new Japanese footage and stuff as well. There's been a couple of things that people have picked up on. It seems like this remaster is going to actually be based on the Japanese, you know, kind of translation of the game, which actually has a pretty significant impact on some of the dialogue and stuff in the game that has, you know, not like wide sweeping narrative changes, but like significant things that mean a lot to people who are fans of this. So that's kind of interesting. And, you know, people in the chat are pointing out Super Nintendad is here in the chat. Shy Guy's here in the chat. And they're pointing out that it was confirmed that the game is going to run at 30 frames per second.
Yeah.
Whereas the original game was 60 frames per second on GameCube. I imagine that's just because this is like, this is not just a straight up and down sort of like port of the game. I think that these are probably remade assets. And to be fair, and this also is something that I heard from GVG's preview coverage. Shy Guy pointed out, like, I'm, you know, like, hopefully the 30 FPS thing won't have a big impact on like timing and combat. It sounds like they have made the timing and combat like noticeably more forgiving to compensate. Whereas stuff like the super effective combat timing stuff is still quite precise. So it sounds like they're kind of tweaking things to compensate for the new frame rate and things like this. So I'm not super worried about that. The big thing here, and they get into a few little tweaks here. The partner ring is really cool.
Yep.
How you no longer have to like go into a menu and swap your partners and stuff. There's just a little ring that comes up, like kind of like an Animal Crossing tool ring, and you swap your partners really quick and snappy. But the biggest like sort of thing here is the new fast travel options, man. That's going to make this game way, way easier to play, because the Thousand Year Door for me, and I love the game. I've always loved the game. The biggest sticking point, that game has got a lot of backtracking in it. And if you're trying to clear things out, it's really annoying and cumbersome to get around. It was a little bit of a problem with Paper Mario 64 as well, but 64 had a much smaller scale to it. And so with this, they kind of just have a little fast travel hub with warp pipes. It's going to make things way smoother and way easier. And that alone, I think, is going to make this a substantially improved experience.
Yeah, that was like the one big addition that they were really pushing forward, especially on the website for the game. They talked about upgraded visuals and sound galleries and all this stuff. But the big final bullet point there was this new pipe room that's going to function, just like you said, as a much as a much more efficient fast travel system for the game. That seems to be kind of the biggest change in the actual gameplay of the title. And you know, you're not the first person that I've heard talk about how this is going to be a godsend and how this is actually a huge huge feature that people are incredibly happy to see.
Yeah. And in addition to that, they've got things like a kind of hint system, which is going to be helpful for people. You've got these characters that are there to like practice combat and battle
Master
challenges.
Toad, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. It's like neat little additions like that. I think for me, I look at this much more in line with like less the Mario RPG remake, which did add like some new content to it.
Yeah.
I look at this more like a Skyward Sword HD, more like a, hey, like we're just making the, you know, the optimal version of the thing that exists. For people who, you know, for people who maybe missed it or can't afford to get it anymore because it's like prohibitively expensive on the aftermarket. So I don't know. I think that for me, I'm like, I will take just a really good, clean, polished, you know, smoothing out some of the few rough edges that the game had, version of this. And as long as it's like a locked 30 frames with zero dips, I don't care that it's 30 frames. I'm good.
I don't either. Yeah. Frames per second FPS has been something that it seems like it's just artificially used to generate outrage. Yes, 60 would be nice. And yes, the original game did run at 60. So yeah, it does stink that this game doesn't. But still, again, for somebody who grew up on the NES, man, like 30 versus 60 frames per second is not going to affect my gameplay experience whatsoever. So I do think that people really blow that out of proportion. But I mean, I'm still excited for the game. I am. So we'll see if we'll see what the actual final version looks like. I will say, in terms of like the badges and stuff, I guess they're using a I saw a GVD and I saw Game Explains coverage of the game. I guess they're using the badge to cover the classic soundtrack of the game. I guess there's a badge specifically used to unlock the original Thousand Year Door soundtrack. And it looks like that may be the only new badge to the game as well, unless some have been removed and others replaced with them or something. But it is nice to see that they are at least adding some way into the game, although I think it's a weird way to kind of implement that as an equipable accessory rather than just like a menu option you can turn on or off. But it is nice that you can, you still have access to the game's classic soundtrack. That was something that we got to see in the Super Mario RPG remake. And that's something that Nintendo has been admittedly very good about when it comes to a lot of these kind of legacy remakes and re-releases.
Yeah, I think it's cute. I think it's kind of a cute little addition. And yeah, the art gallery and stuff, you have to find all of the like star pieces in an area, and you'll get just like a bunch of concept art. You'll get, you know, the sound gallery of music and stuff like this, which that's the kind of thing that actually I would have liked to see in like the paper or the Mario RPG remake. Like, I love it when we have concept art and you get a sound gallery and stuff. It did have a sound gallery, but I love it when we get that kind of additional like museum kind of style content. So I'm really excited about it. Yeah, there's the badge. It's like a GameCube badge, which is kind of cute.
It's actually shaped like a GameCube. It's adorable.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. And it's the kind of thing too where you listen to the rearranged music that's even just in this trailer. It is considerably different. Yeah. And not always for the better, in my opinion. But there's a couple of there's a couple of tracks in there, especially like the battle theme, that is way like deeper and like more fully orchestrated. Like, you could be forgiven for thinking you're listening to like Origami King music with some of this stuff. It looks really good. I just, the level of polish and like attention to detail here, I'm very excited to kind of replay this. And y'all, if y'all have been listening to the show for a while, I've been in my Paper Mario resurgence here lately. So this is coming at a good time for me. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. May 23rd. Yeah.
Ultimately, it's a legendary game. It's coming out like, you know, right around the 20-year anniversary of the original. So brand new generation of people are hopefully going to be able to check it out for the first time and find out why so many people talk about it on the internet.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some Lego, shall we?
I mean, sure. Why not? I mean, we're a Nintendo podcast. I don't know why. What reason we could... Oh my god, it's KK Slider in Lego form. I need all of it right now.
Enhance. We got Lego KK Slider here. This was announced via Twitter. On August 1st, there's going to be a new wave of Lego Animal Crossing. And we can see here in the kind of final, they put up a little like teaser here. A couple of shots. The sets themselves have not been fully detailed yet, but it looks like there's going to be kind of a town square set, which of course is going to include KK Slider. You're going to have like, you know, some of your like roaming carts, the actual town hall itself, you know, then you got the Dodo Airlines, the dock, you know,
you got with the biplane.
So that's all coming August 1st. Looks pretty cool.
It does. And man, I've been pretty good about staying away from all the Nintendo Lego stuff. Even when they did the, you know, the not the augmented reality, but the kind of enhanced functionality Mario stuff and all of the minifigs, the DK stuff. But I'm not going to lie, this is really adorable. This obviously isn't the first wave of Lego Animal Crossing stuff. They've done Nook's Cranny, and they've done a lot of kind of the villagers and the houses, and Isabelle's already been introduced. So, but it just, with all of this, this wave is going to make it so that you really kind of can finish some semblance of a Lego Animal Crossing island. You won't have the museum yet, although I imagine that's probably coming in the next one. But with the town hall, with Nook's Cranny, with the airport, with the houses, if you really wanted to, you really could build a full seeming Animal Crossing island come August 1st this year.
Yeah, and let's make sure to notate here, as it says in the video, Lego KK minifigure doesn't actually sing or move, in case you were curious. We do need to clarify that. But yeah, this looks cool. This looks great. The Lego Animal Crossing stuff is great, man.
Yeah, it's just that's really such an obvious crossover, just with how cozy and how adorable Animal Crossing has always been. Having a Lego collaboration just made way too much sense, even more so than the Super Mario stuff. So
totally. Yeah, totally. Looks really cool. August 1st for y'all Animal Crossing Lego fans. You'll have more stuff to buy. And I bet you between now and then, they'll probably reveal some more stuff for that wave too.
Very possibly. I don't know. Again, I don't imagine the museum's coming there, but you know, maybe another house or so. There's way too many villagers not to add a few more into this coming wave. So I don't know. We'll see.
I'm a little surprised that they haven't done with the villagers in particular. Cause with Mario, they had like blind bags for the Mario enemies. Yeah. I'm a little surprised they don't just do that for the villagers, just put out bags, you know? So I don't know. We'll see. August 1st, those are coming. A couple of other little stories here that are kind of interesting. We have known for some time now that Epic has tried to court Nintendo in the past to cross over with Fortnite in particular. There were leaked documents about the pitches that they've made to Nintendo in the past. Particularly, they have long wanted to include Samus as a playable character in Fortnite. And in a recent interview with GameFile, former Epic Games CCO Donald Mustard said, quote, "They, Nintendo, got really hung up on their characters showing up on platforms that weren't their platforms. They would be thrilled to have Nintendo characters in Fortnite, but just only if it's on their platform," end quote. Essentially, Nintendo said, hey, cool, like, we can put Nintendo characters in Fortnite, but they can only be for Nintendo Switch players, which is not the way Fortnite works.
Yeah.
So
that's the way we got Master Chief and Kratos on a Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
Is Fortnite. So similarly, had Samus, the big character in question here, had Samus actually been added to Fortnite, you would have been able to play as Samus on a PlayStation. You would have been able to play as Samus on a PC or on an Xbox. And Nintendo, for a very, very long time, has been incredibly sensitive about their console exclusivity, as we are all incredibly well aware of. So even that little bit of lost exclusivity did kind of, dissolve the deal, unfortunately. But, I mean, Samus made way too much sense for Fortnite. Many people, including us, speculated on the possible inclusion of the incredibly of the legendary bounty hunter maybe one day coming to Fortnite, but basically the reason we all knew was going to be the reason came into play.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because the Shy Guy makes the point, they did that for the Samus and Mario and Luigi cars in Rocket League. They're only visible to Switch players. Everyone else sees a plain Octane car. It's interesting. Because I think a lot of speculation as to why this wasn't happening already was like, oh, well, it's because they don't want to see Samus dancing to BTS and shooting Peter Griffin in the face, or whatever. And I think that, that would have been a totally valid reason for Nintendo. They're very protective of their IP.
But yes,
that's not why it is. Like, Nintendo's like, actually, we would be all good. If you could make it so that, like, these are only available to Switch players, we would be totally happy to be in Fortnite. So that's really interesting. And it's not like just some rumors. Like, he would know. The former CCO of Epic Games is probably not, talking out of thin air.
Well, I'm sure he was a big part of those pitches and those discussions.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. So just kind of an interesting little story that, like, the speculation can kind of be laid to rest. There's, a clear line in the sand that Nintendo just didn't want to cross. And, again, because of the nature of Fortnite and because of the precedent that something like Master Chief and Kratos set, like, they didn't give Sony or Microsoft that deal. So, like, they're not going to do it with Nintendo either. So,
yep. Yeah,
I don't think you're ever going to see Nintendo stuff in Fortnite because of that, but yeah.
Yeah, there's not a doubt in my mind that that the Xbox and Sony bigwigs probably at least asked the questions like, hey, this is our character. Is there any way that we could keep it on our console? I'm sure that question was at least asked.
Yeah. Very, very funny little story. Kind of cool to put a bow on that whole debate. after all this time. Well, there's another little legal story going on this past week. Nintendo has issued widespread takedowns of all Nintendo-related content from the popular 2006 modding tool Garry's Mod on Steam this week. For those who don't know what Garry's Mod is, it is a modding tool based in the like Valve Source engine that people create mod content in and mess around in, and you can do like online multiplayer. Very, very popular. It's consistently one of the most played games on Steam and has been for, you know, 15 years plus now. So, you know, it's very, very popular, and people have long made like Nintendo, you know, kind of content in there and stuff like this.
Distinction I think we should make is Garry's Mod is not itself using copyrighted Nintendo assets.
It's a within tool.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's not any official capacity. There is a thing called the Garry's Mod Workshop, which is like a sort of like a it's not a storefront because you don't purchase them, but it is like a marketplace where you can subscribe to mod creators and, you know, download mods and things like this. There is a precedent set for sort of like external deals of people being like, hey, I made this thing in Garry's Mod and like pay me for it, or, you know, or whatever. People do sell things externally using Garry's Mod, but they have no way to police that, obviously. So anyways, TLDR, Nintendo has, out of the clear blue sky, you know, said this past week, like, hey, no more, take it all down. And the Garry's Mod creator, Gary Newman, while Nintendo itself has not made any sort of statement, Gary Newman did confirm the legitimacy of those takedowns. He put out a statement on Twitter saying, quote, I've been assured that the takedowns have been verified by Nintendo as legit, so this will now continue as planned. Sorry, end quote. And if you go to the Garry's Mod workshop right now, you'll see some pretty unhappy people, to put it lightly, at Nintendo's decision to remove all Nintendo content from Garry's Mod.
Yeah, every once in a while we get a story like this, and I do hate to see it. You know, the Silvagana story felt exactly like this. And it stinks because, again, like, this guy just created a tool for people to use with no intent of stepping on anybody's toes. It is, you know, the users who basically went and ran with it. And again, we don't know a lot of the inside details, and we don't know the specifics about why Nintendo did this week finally decide to issue these types of takedowns. But when it comes to Garry's Mod, like, the guy didn't do anything himself. No. So you hate to see something like this happen.
No, and they're not, you know, threatening legal action or anything like this. They're not suing the guy. They're not, you know, nothing like that. But they're, you know, that Garry's Mod.
You know, Nintendo Garry's Mod standing behind him, you know.
Yeah. They're being compliant to the takedown request, and they're just saying, like, hey, this is all gotta go. And it is interesting. You know, I'm not an analyst or anything like this, or a lawyer, but if I had my speculation cap on just based on Nintendo's, like, the sort of stuff that Nintendo has been doing lately, I get this sense from Nintendo that they really want to control the message, that they really want to make sure that there is no confusion in the marketplace about, and maybe this is just because of the popularity of Switch, they don't want anybody to ever think that, like, this is affiliated in any way with Nintendo, even though it's clearly parody, even though there's no reason to think that. They don't want there to be any sort of like confusion at all from players. So they would rather just nix the whole thing as a blanket, you know, sort of thing. We've seen this in the way that they've approached things like, you know, Smash tournaments and things like this. We've seen it even in the way that they're treating like the messaging of their own products. They won't tell you who is developing their games. They say, wait until the credits come. And I think it's because they want the narrative to be, well, Nintendo made it. You know, like, we don't care if you know that Goodfeel made, you know, Princess Peach Showtime. Nintendo made it. You know, they want Nintendo to be a fairly ubiquitous term moving into this huge, glorious era of the company, you know?
Nintendo is the new voice of Mario.
Right. That's the thing. They didn't want to tell you who the new voice of Mario was, right? Wait till you see the credits. They want to really, I get the sense that they really want to control, you know, I'm not saying it's like a good or bad thing. It's weird. I'm not about it personally.
I'm not either, but it, to me, it almost feels like just a a 2.5 decade long overreaction to stuff like the Philips CDI and stuff that happened to them in the early 90s, especially when other players were coming into the market and they found themselves not as in control of their own IPs as they wanted to. And I'm sure there's a lot of people at Nintendo currently still feeling like, you know, just because of how much more powerful the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X are, I'm sure there are still a lot of people that are feeling like they're playing catch up to PlayStation and Microsoft all these years later. And I wonder if they think that, you know, in order to, you know, in order to keep from falling behind any further, they need to be able to control as many things as possible.
They're, I mean, the thing is, they're falling behind in zero ways. I mean, other than power, that's the only thing. They are the ruler of the roost. They've got one of the best-selling franchises and are hardware of all time with Nintendo Switch. Where's the Sony theme park? Where's the Microsoft theme park? Where's the Sony movies and the micro? They are the leader in this space.
We've seen how video game analysts think. We've seen how wildly speculative they can be, and very incorrectly speculative very often. I guarantee you there are an entire team of analysts sitting at Nintendo right now fear-mongering a lot of the higher-ups, saying,
maybe,
you know, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. Again, that for me is just purely speculation. I don't know anything. I'm not a fly on the wall. Even I don't have an uncle that works at Nintendo. I'm just, you know, my experience makes me think.
Sure. Yeah, no, I neither of us know anything. But it's the sort of thing. Right. Yeah. It's the sort of thing where like I look at it as they're like, hey, like we're at this place now. We have reach and we have, you know, money and power and like a scale of which we've never had in Nintendo's history. They're bigger now than they have ever been. They're on top of the world. They don't have competition. You know, it's not like Microsoft and Sony are not their competitors anymore, you know? So it's really interesting to see the way they're sort of like trying to make sure that like, hey, since we're here, we want to make sure everything's kind of on level playing field. We want to make sure that we're communicating to you the way that we want to communicate to you and that you have an understanding of us the way that we want you to have an understanding of us. And things like the Garry's Mod thing is just one way of sort of curbing that, I think.
Yeah.
So very interesting stuff. Okay. Got a couple of other little things to tap into here. This is a report that came out from a Japanese newspaper this week. Kyoto Shimbun. This is a Japanese newspaper that reported the 27-year-old male suspect, the person who was suspected for sending death threats that ultimately led to the cancellation of Nintendo Live Tokyo 2024, has been charged officially. The charge is obstructing the company's business by force. The report states that he sent 39 threats to Nintendo between April 22nd and November 29th of last year. You can find VGC like reported on this and has some translated, you know, manuscripts and stuff and some of the threats that the dude was sending. If you really want to dig into it, I'm not going to repeat them here. But that stuff is out there. But yeah, the dude suspected for sending those death threats, it sounds like he has been found and has been charged for the cancellation of Nintendo Live Tokyo.
Yeah. I mean, sending death threats to video game devs. I mean, it's one thing to like hate a corporate entity as a whole, but sending death threats to individualized human beings that work for that company, I hope they throw every book they can find at them.
We'll see, man. It's the kind of thing, you know, I said it before earlier today. I'll say it again now. You play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. Right?
You did say that.
There's not much to really say other than that. We'll see what happens. I don't know what the actual like penalty is going to wind up being. I don't know if he's going to get jail time or whatever. We'll see. I'm sure he will. Okay. Well, we do have a little NSO update that happened this past week, kind of out of nowhere. Like really out of nowhere, two kind of like niche N64 games dropped. Made me
happy. This was maybe the most random NSO drop we've ever gotten. No pomp, no circumstance, no prior notice, games that had not been announced previously as ever coming to NSO. And yet Tuesday evening, hey guys, Extreme G and Iggy's Wrecking Balls for the Nintendo 64 are available to play right now. I mean, sure. Yeah. I even for people who own the Nintendo 64, I'm sure that there aren't a lot out there who remember a lot of these games. But I mean, you're looking at, if you're watching the video, you can see them on the screen right now. And they are kind of bonkers. Both of them are, one is a straight up racing game. The other is kind of more of a, like a racing puzzle platformer, I guess. But yeah, if you have the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack and you have the N64 NSO app, both of those dropped this past Tuesday and are available to play right now.
Yeah. Iggy's Wrecking Balls is in particular one that that I think is kind of a fun little inclusion. The Throwback Entertainment, I think, is a new, like, because these games were developed by Acclaim, or published, I think, by Acclaim originally. And so I think Throwback Entertainment is kind of the new, like, moniker that they're throwing under, like, Acclaim games. So I think that's what that is. You see it on, like, the new box art and stuff like this. But Iggy's Wrecking Balls, that's a Iguana Entertainment game. I've always liked Iggy's Wrecking Balls, man. It's kind of just a fun, weird little thing, especially in multiplayer. It's got a fun little, like, multiplayer, you know, kind of suite there. And yeah, it's kind of a combination. It's like a very weird perspective, like, combat racing game. Yeah, it's kind of neat. I've never played Extreme G, so I'm actually excited to play Extreme G for the first time.
Yeah, I haven't had the chance to play it. There's been way too many other major releases this week and other stuff that I've been trying to put time into, but I'd be down to try Iggy's Wrecking Balls. I mean, why not? It just looks to me like maybe a couple designs that should be added to Marble Blast or Marble It Up Ultra cool. or something.
Yeah, that'd be neat. Yeah, Extreme G kind of just looks like a fun, like, motorcycle racing game.
Yeah.
It looks very fast. I like the sort of, like, you know, Neo 2000s, like, yeah, style of the whole thing.
It looks like the motorcycle cousin of Hydro Thunder.
Yeah, like, I'm kind of into it. So I'm going to boot this up and try it out. And Iggy's Wrecking Balls, again, just kind of a neat game to have. I like that we're getting this kind of stuff. I like that
too.
It's not just all your Mario 64s and your Ocarina of Times and stuff like this.
Well, we've got all of those at this point, so
that's what I'm saying. Like, we don't, you know, give me some of the, you know, like I'm hoping that we get stuff like put Buck Bumble on this bad boy.
Dude, Robot Rocket on Wheels, please.
Yeah,
dude,
put stuff like that on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we got that, I would be so happy. Obviously, you know, there's a few more Rare games that I hope eventually come. But yeah, this is just showing that, yeah, the Nintendo 64 wasn't just Rare and Nintendo. There were some really cool hidden gems on that console as well. As a matter of fact, we talk about that quite a bit in tomorrow's full episode of All in a Nintendo Podcast, you guys.
That's true, we do. That is true, we do. Okay, well, before we say goodnight, let's shout out some notable release. I was going to say honorable mentions, like we're doing a top five. Notable releases from this week. It's a stacked week.
It really is a stacked week. So a couple big elephants in the room when it comes to the releases. I would say maybe the biggest release of the week came to us from our good friends over at AgroGrab. As a matter of fact, you streamed another Crab's Treasure for a few hours yesterday. Here we have the footage up on the live broadcast. And we've been waiting for this one for quite some time. This is an adorable little Souls-like, a self-proclaimed Souls-like from, again, the developers over at AgroGrab. And, you know, as we're recording this just yesterday, we finally got it in our hands. And you have a few early impressions. I will point people toward this video. But, yeah, I'm really, really excited for this one to come out. This is probably, well, not probably, this is actually going to be my first foray into this entire Souls-like genre, so I'm excited to check it out myself.
I'm excited for you to check it out, too. I will close the video there as I die on the VOD there. Yeah, I'm excited for you to play. It's really cool. The Switch version has problems. They have already said, like, their number one priority, they issued a statement, like, earlier today, their number one priority is actually to make sure that the Switch version, gets, like, optimized better and, you know, emergency bug fixes and stuff like this. There are a couple of soft locks in the game that they're focusing on fixing right away. So
I know you encountered one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I was not the only one either. So, Yeah, so it's nice that they're actually, you know, focusing on optimizing stuff, and you know, it's not the end of the story for another Crab's Treasure. So
yeah, and I will say, if you're playing the game, Aggro Crab has made it, you know, they're very good about reaching out to people. It's like, hey, if you have a bug, you know, we have this like form, you know, come to us, let us know. Like, we actively want people to let us know about the bug fixes so we can know what to work on and what needs to get fixed and tweaked and stuff. So they're actively reaching out to people to get them to help optimize the game, because I mean, they could play this game for them by themselves for thousands of hours, but when you have, you know, tens of thousands of game testers out there, once a game launches, it's much easier to find stuff like this.
Yeah. And I mean, other than that, the game's great. I mean, it's really cool. I'm looking forward to playing a bunch more of it this weekend.
Yeah. Speaking of incredibly high profile indie game releases where the Nintendo Switch version does immediately seem to not quite be up on parity, not quite up on par with the other, is another game that I'm really excited for. Tales of Kinzar's Owl that released, which you also streamed for a couple hours on its launch day this past week. And this was the one, if you remember, was very passionately pitched a few months ago during the Game Awards in December from the game's mastermind, Aboubakar Saleem. And I've just his pitch, just him presenting the game at that, immediately made it one of my most anticipated indie games of this year. Again, you streamed it a couple hours ago. I will point people toward that video on our YouTube channel. But I have, like, there was no way that I wasn't going to put a couple hours into this game this week. And I'm really looking forward to playing through to the end. Doesn't seem, from a mechanical standpoint, like it's going to be doing anything super new or super groundbreaking. But the story, the narrative, the characters are all just incredibly, incredibly well-crafted. And just for that reason alone, I can't wait to kind of, you know, finish my journey with this title.
Yep, I agree. The narrative is really cool and special about this game. We have some kind of more extended impressions on both Another Crab's Treasure and Tales of Kinzar Zao on tomorrow's episode. So
we do. Look forward to it. There were so many games that came out this week. Obviously, we've already shouted out Extreme G and Iggy's Wrecking Balls for the Nintendo Switch NSO. But another classic game that came to Nintendo Switch, yet another Atari follow-up. Atari released Lunar Lander Beyond this week. And I mean, I love what Atari's doing. They're working with Digital Eclipse on a ton of different projects. We already know about the upcoming Yars Rising. But yeah, a new take on a classic arcade game from Atari. Again, it's called Lunar Lander Beyond. If you're a fan of those old games like I am, it probably fell completely under your radar with the weight of everything else coming out. But that is also available now on the Nintendo Switch eShop. Check it out.
Very cool. Got a couple of RPGs that came out this week between Ayuden Chronicles 100 Heroes, which has been in development for a long time. A lot of people very hyped about that one. Sounds like the Switch version's got some issues. I think they've also like begun issuing patches for that already as well. Kind of a recurring theme this week. So we have that kind of finally come out this week. And then Saga Emerald Beyond also came out this week. Kind of two, you know, fairly substantial JRPGs, both releasing on the Switch this week.
Yeah, you know, it's so weird. I remember when Saga was like one of the big premier like JRPG franchises in the mid-90s and something. So it just feels weird here in 2024. It's like, oh yes, a new Saga game also came out, just because there's so many things that are releasing. But if you're a fan, again, of those classic Saga games, maybe check this one out. Again, that's called Saga Emerald Beyond, released this week on Nintendo Switch. There was a game that I really thought was cool from the Level 5 Direct that the, you know, the developers of the Professor Layton series put on, this big mech battling game called Megaton Musashi W. I completely forgot that was coming out this week. That's also available right now. I don't think Level 5 did nearly a good enough job in the lead up to the release of that game to let us know that it was about to drop. Maybe they didn't expect a lot of sales in the West, so they didn't worry about it too much. But yeah, it's like a really cool super mecha fighting game from, again, the developers of the Professor Layton series. The trailers look really cool. I recommend checking out the videos on it, but I want to find some time to check this game out. There's so many other things right now that I need to play, but I really do want to check out Megaton Musashi W.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind checking it out. It did look neat, based on the stuff we saw, but it's not not at the top of my queue. But you know, maybe I'll wishlist it and somewhere down the line. Yeah. New TMNT game also came out this week, Wrath of the Mutants. This game looks bad, I'm just going to be honest.
Well, they can't all be winners. Well, you say it looks bad. There's been a lot of early impressions of this once arcade exclusive title that just came to consoles that I'm not going to really beat around the bush. They're not very flattering. So yeah. Maybe do your due diligence before hitting purchase on that one. I know we've been getting a lot of bangers when it comes to the TMNT over the past few years, but maybe look at a couple things before committing some funds.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about some games that are good. Dadish 3D came out this past week. I've got a video up for it on the YouTube channel right now. It's a really neat kind of little, you know, cute, simple, no-nonsense 3D platformer. The Dadish series kind of making its way to the 3D space. You know, it's got a little bit of like that kind of, you know, jank or whatever, but it's just kind of a cute little, you know, standard platform. You'll play through it in like 3 to 4 hours. You know,
no-nonsense. The Dadish series, Seth?
Yeah, there's a bunch of Dadish games, which I didn't even know about. There's like like five, I think, Dadish, like 2D platformers. There's a bunch of... you know, like he's now kind of doing like getting into the 3D as like a spinoff. It's also out on mobile and it kind of does feel a little bit like a mobile game, you know, but it's neat. Like it's kind of neat and cute for what it is. So if you're looking for something like that, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah. And again, video available right now on our YouTube channel for that.
Mm-hmm. Got a video for that. Another video that we have up on the YouTube channel, maybe the sleeper hit of the week. Rattle. Yeah.
Got Chad in here playing this game earlier.
I love that people are giving Rattarinth a chance, because I really do think that this is a really cool little game for what it is. This is a $5, you know, like no nonsense little pixel art, you know, monochromatic 2D platformer. Just feels good, has a low key, really good soundtrack. You're watching me die a bunch right now on stream, but it's just kind of cute. Like it's just kind of good. Shy Guy's in the chat. These end levels sending me to my early grave. It does get a little tricky once you get into it's 80 stages. And yeah, it's just really good. Like for what it is, it's just like, you know, like the controls feel good. I kind of like how the stages are a little bit more open. Often you'll have a couple of pathways through them. There's some off the beaten path, little collectible palettes to change the way the game looks. And yeah, it's, you know, like there's not a lot of fluff to it. It's just a kind of really good way to spend like an hour and a half, you know, play through the thing, have a good time. It's only going to cost you a couple dollars. I really like it.
So. Yeah. You and I always seem to be taken with these monochromatic games, the Downwells, the Minutes, the Gato Robatos of the world. But, you know, whereas those games are not incredibly precise, very quick, turn-based, stage-based, rather, 2D platformers, this one is. And you said it's 80 stages, probably take you about an hour and a half for most people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not going to take you long to go through it. Bowser shouts out the boss levels. There's some really cool, like set piece, you know, kind of like big boss, like moments in the game. It's pretty neat. Like it's just well made. Like it's just good for what it is. You know, it's not going to be anybody's like game of the year or anything, but like, it's just a really fun little way to spend some time and, you know, not a lot of time and not a lot of money.
Yeah.
So people should be aware of Rattarinth.
It's probably super easy to be reductive with a game like that. But if I were going to say anything, it'd be like, if you were looking for a game to scratch like a Super Meat Boy style itch, it looks like that would be a game for you.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. It's not as demanding, I wouldn't say, as that, but it has that same like immediacy. Like as y'all saw, I died plenty in that video I was just showing. When you die, you're right back. You know, it's not a big deal. The levels are pretty brisk, you know, for the most part. It's just, you know, if you are into games like that, then you'll like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. So, but that's all That's come. There's actually been a few other games. There's a new anime like Hunter x Hunter or something game that came out as well. It's been a pretty stacked week, ladies and gentlemen. Plenty for you to play this weekend and going into next week before, of course, everybody drops everything they're doing to pick up Endless Ocean Luminous next right, week, obviously.
Of course.
But yes. That has been our Nintendo News Roundup this week. Let us know what you guys are up to. Let us know what you are playing. Reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Podcast. You know, make sure to check out our YouTube channel right here. If you're watching us on YouTube, go ahead and like, subscribe, click the bell for notifications. If you're watching us live on Twitter, go ahead and, you know, maybe migrate over to YouTube at some point. Not only do we have these weekly Nintendo News Roundups, but we have all the first looks and the streams. And I do a weekly series called Quarter Circle Forward, in addition to a ton of other first looks. There's a ton of content is what we're saying, folks. We also have an amazing Discord community we would love for you to come be a part of. As a matter of fact, our Discord community inspired a massive chunk of our episode tomorrow of All In a Nintendo Podcast. So ton of amazing people in that community, ton of amazing conversations. But in addition to all of that, in addition to the social media, the YouTube, and our amazing Discord community, we also somehow find a way to make exclusive content for those amazing patrons we shouted out at the top of the news roundup.
Yeah, patreon.com/allinpodcast. It's a good place to be. There's exclusive content that goes up there all the time. Early access to things like BitHarmony. Triforce tier patrons get exclusive discounts on our merch and stuff like this. So you can get a 7-day free trial over there and see what all the fuss is about for yourself. We would appreciate that. Merch, speaking of, if you're watching on YouTube, it's below. Links to all that stuff is below. AllIn.media is the place to go for that. So we appreciate you for that. Yeah, if you're watching on YouTube, subscribe. Oh, God. Hit like and subscribe. I'm like dying over here. Like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Thank you very much for doing that.
Do that.
Leave your comments below. We appreciate that. And if you're listening on your audio feeds, 5-star reviews, really appreciated. Easy and you know, quick and free way to support the show. And yeah, we appreciate y'all for doing that. Thank you so much. Yeah.
We absolutely do. For everybody who's picked up a piece of our merch at allin.media, and for everybody who's going to this weekend after they see this swanky polo that I've been wearing, for all of those amazing patrons we shouted out at the top of the episode, for everybody who has dropped words on whatever podcasting or video service you guys happen to follow us on, and for all of you who have even just shared our content across this vast internet of ours, to each and every one of you, we would like to extend a huge Friday evening namaste.
Namaste, everybody. That's been the news. We appreciate y'all for coming out. Thank you to Shy Guy, Hellish Hopper, who came in here just to like talk smack about Paper Mario. Appreciate you for coming by anyway. Super Nintendad, Nikki Hamilton, Bowza, a bunch of people here in the chat tonight. So thank y'all for watching. There's an episode of All In Nintendo Podcast going live tomorrow, of course. Just as always, you'll get to hear that on your podcast feeds. As Eric kind of alluded to, we've got a fun discussion about the nature of collection and collectibles and 100%ing video games. Got a fun little discussion there that was inspired by a conversation happening in our Discord. So that was a fun conversation. We're doing a top five on the top five hidden gems on the NSO. So that was fun. And then we've got an indie showcase interview with the solo developer of Pepper Grinder, Riv Hester. So that's going to be on the show tomorrow as well. It should be a good episode. We will see y'all there. Again, that's on your podcast feed tomorrow. Links to everything are in the video description if you're watching on YouTube, / the show notes if you listen on your podcast feed. So join the Discord, tune into the show tomorrow. And until next time, guys. Bye-bye.